G'day guys, Aidan Guerra here. Just going to sit down and talk about my career here on the podcast.
All right, back for another edition of the Our Town, Our Team podcast. Nathan Ryan alongside Aidan Guerra. Doss, how's the injury coming along to start off? You went down a couple of weeks ago. Great to see you moving around, but how's the body feeling?
Yeah, the body's good. There was a stage there where I didn't know if it was going to feel better, but it probably took about a week and a half until just the pain was had subsided enough just so I could stand up in the kitchen or go to the toilet without it throbbing. So now that's all passed. It's a good sign that I'm up, moving around, and pain-free to an extent. And now it's just all about getting range of motion back in the ankle and being able to get the mechanics to be able to run again.
When you go down with an injury, especially at this stage in your career, you've done a lot and you've been in the NRL a long time, your body's taken a lot of punishment. What are the type of things that are going through your mind when that initial injury happens?
My first thought was get me the green whistle. And they were pretty good at that.
They did.
The doc, he fumbled around in his bag for a bit there, and I might have told him to hurry up, but once we knew what it was and that I was going to have to get surgery, I've been pretty positive about it. I haven't had an injury that's kept me out for an extended period of time for about 10 years, so I didn't feel like, you know, it was going to be the end, and I didn't feel like, you know, this could end it for me, or, you know, I just don't feel like it's severe enough for that thought. The thought that's going through my mind is how quickly can I get back out there and hopefully winning some games between now and then and for a push.
Absolutely. Before we get off the injury, what is the timeline to return to play? Is there a return date sort of penciled in?
Initially, before the scans come through, we sort of thought it was both bones that broke, and fortunately for myself, it was only one, so they played it and screwed it, and all the ligaments were intact. So they were pretty confident that I'll be back around the 3-month mark. But in saying that, been around footy long enough to know that some injuries, when people recover, the rehab goes to plan, and sometimes they don't. So I'm just, taking it a week at a time, setting little goals. First one was to get me. First one is to get off the crutches, because they're making life a little bit difficult. But just small steps.
When you're going through an injury, and we had Slade Griffin on the podcast last week, so you've done your right ankle. I guess the thing that people forget about, because they only see the 80 minutes on the field, but you have a life away from footy. So you have a young family, kids to worry about. When you're injured, that then impacts on what you can do with family life as well, doesn't it?
Certainly does. I haven't been doing too much around the house, to be honest. My wife, she's ready for me to get off the crutches as well, let's put it that way. When it comes to the kids, if the baby was crying, I can't go and get her. So the wife's been busy. She's been very busy. I've just been planted on the couch. So we make and do, and she's working really hard. And as the ankle feels better, I'm going to try and help out a little bit more, because at the moment she's pretty much the last 2.5 weeks she's been a full-time carer for 3 people.
All right, enough on the injury front. Let's talk about the journey. You're born in far north Queensland. How does a bloke up north end up in Melbourne?
Funny story, really. I was never touted as going to be a great football player.
Right.
It wasn't really on my radar, to be honest. Probably took halfway through grade 12 when I was only playing school footy. I wasn't playing any club stuff. And
really?
I had a good carnival, and the Storm actually, they didn't talk about signing me. They just invited me to go to their captain's run when they played against the Cowboys. So I went to their captain's run and just got around the players, and that was the last I heard of them. That was middle of the season. They were up there, and then I didn't hear anything. And he's actually the assistant coach here now. Christian Wolf was my school teacher at the time.
No way.
Yeah. He was my footy coach. and I got an offer. I was at Schoolies actually at Airlie Beach. I had a couple and checked my emails the next morning, and there was something there from the Burley Bears. So I rang to just to play in their Colts competition, and yep. I wanted to travel. And I saw that as a way to get out of Townsville and
yep.
see what the rest of Australia has to offer. And it looked like Burley was where I was going to end up. And then I spoke to Wolfie and I said, mate, I've got this offer from the Bears. He said, just wait, we'll call the guy from the Storm. And he done that, and he called me back and he said, they told me to wait a week and they'll see if they can come up with something. And then the next day I got a phone call from the recruitment bloke from the Storm, and he said, we're going to get you down, move you to Brisbane and give you a shot in our development at the North Devils. So I went there for 2 years, actually broke my ankle at the start of the second season there, and as I was in the hospital bed waiting for surgery, I got a phone call from Craig Bellamy, and because I'd previously done the pre-season with the full-time squad.
Right.
And he said, mate, I like what you're about. Don't stress about this injury, because next year you'll be down with us.
Wow.
Yeah, then just got opportunities after that, and here I am.
So after that first pre-season, you rehab the ankle. Do you then move down, or do you finish the year in Brisbane before joining the Storm full-time?
I finished the year in Brisbane, but I didn't play any footy. I didn't do anything. I continued to have issues with that ankle.
Right.
So I went down and started pre-season. Played the first two games of 20s. That was the first year of 20s. And broke the same ankle again. That's my left ankle. So I had another surgery then. And then I came back about round 16 or 18 or something and played four games and broke my ankle again with the screws in it.
Jeez.
So that surgery to follow was a big one. They found out that the way that I loaded my ankle was wrong, and had a pretty big surgery on that, and that took me till halfway through the next season, which was 2009, and I played 10 games in reserve grade, and I was behind some pretty good players at the Storm. I felt like I was ready for first grade.
Yeah.
And went with an opportunity at the Roosters.
Before I get onto the Roosters, you never played any local footy. You were just playing for the school team.
That was the last year. That was when I was 17. I just played for fun with my mates at school.
So what was the plan? Because you mentioned you're at school is when you were looking through the emails. If footy wasn't on the radar, which it sounds like that was never part of the plan for a career, what was the plan? What were you intending on doing?
Probably just would have fudged around in towns with my mates, to be honest. I mean, my old boy was a builder. I ended up starting a carpentry apprenticeship while I was in Brisbane, but that was never my goal. I just thought I'd see how it all went. I would have ended up getting an apprenticeship in some sort of thing, some sort of trade, but turns out I didn't have to.
So at what stage did you start thinking serious about footy, that this could be a genuine career?
Probably my first year in Brisbane, towards the end there. And we had a bit of success, and mate, my under-19s team, we had like Israel Folau, Will Chambers. We had a couple of really handy footballers, and they went on to go full-time, and that was after my first pre-season. And while I was down there, I played in a trial against Manly, and although my lungs were busted and I was pretty much out of my depth then, I felt like, because I was a 92-kilo back rower, I felt like I could match it with these guys, given the opportunity. And then when I went back to Brisbane, broke my ankle and got the phone call from Bellyache about how he wanted me to go down there, that's when I think he's got a pretty good eye for players with that sort of potential, and for him to see that and in me and then tell me that he saw that in me gave me confidence then.
I would imagine it would. So you're in Brisbane, you make the move down to the Storm, you're knocking on the door for first grade, you feel like you're ready for first grade. You mentioned that the pathway's blocked there, so the Roosters deal. How does that come about? Because you make your debut the following year with the Roosters.
Yeah. Peter O'Sullivan was one of the recruitment guys that got me to the Storm, and he was there for my first year and maybe 2 years. Then he moved to the Roosters, and I got along with him, and then I sort of was talking to my manager, and we tossed up the fact that there was three or four internationals in the back row at the Storm.
Yeah.
And it probably wasn't where I was going to play. Like, I had confidence in myself, but I didn't see myself to the caliber that was going to play in that side. So I saw the Roosters as a building club. They'd just come off they weren't going so well at that time.
Yeah.
And I just thought they're a young group, a chance for me to go and play in the NRL, but also with a group of guys that are also learning as well as I am.
When you have that opportunity, was it a conversation that you had with Craig and he understood, or was it a conversation?
Oh, no, he didn't understand.
No?
he was filthy. And subsequently, that pretty much ended my time with the Storm when I told him I was around 20. We've spoken since, but he didn't have too much to say to me after I told him. And that also, I guess, that gave me a little bit more confidence, because if he didn't think that I was capable, he would have pretty much shown me the door, let alone shut it behind me. So, I took that as a compliment and went to the Roosters and tried to take advantage of an opportunity.
So you get there, Brian Smith coaching at the time.
Yep.
So he gives you your start in round one. What do you remember about your debut against the Rabbitohs?
I went on, one of my good mates, Tommy Simons, got injured, and I went on a little bit earlier than I thought that I would, considering I didn't even know that I was going to debut until like 2 days before the game. Smithy hadn't made his mind up.
Right.
Yeah, so my family had flown down. I just said, listen, come, because I'm a chance. But
just in case.
He hasn't decided. But I ended up playing.
Do you remember who it was between?
Yeah, round one, so Roosters Rabbits.
It was out. No, when he was deciding whether you were going to
win. Oh, no, I couldn't tell you.
Right.
Couldn't tell you. But I was glad he chose me.
Absolutely.
Then I remember I scored a try, and I was just like, how good's this? Yeah. You know, I get to do this now. Yeah. I thought every week, but it didn't pan out that way my first year. But it was a great experience, and one thing that the fact that my family come down and had some friends there as well, you just feel the support you get when things like that happen.
Who was coaching the team? Oh, sorry, who was captaining the team that year?
Braith and Astor.
Braith.
Actually lived on his couch for my first 4 weeks in Sydney. So I was got along with Braith really well. He was a great captain, a great leader, and to let a young fella sleep on his couch for a month, I guess you could say he's a good bloke too.
Absolutely. When you're in the sheds waiting to make your debut, a lot of nervous energy. Did anybody pull you aside and have a quiet word and assure you, or did that sort of happen during the week? I guess just looking for a bit of an insight on how you keep a lid on all that nervous energy.
Yeah, I'm not big on that nervous energy. I get excited by big occasions, and but when it comes to nerves, I don't really remember ever being like crippled by it. And then you see some people, like, they got to spew up, or
it gets better of them.
They go quiet or they go really intense. So I just continue life as it is until like that day, sleep and rested out, and then by the time it comes to game time, I feel like the work's done, and I just get more excited, and the bigger the crowd, the bigger the moment, the better I feel.
Mm. So you play 9 games that year, 3 tries. 2010 was a big year for the club. What do you take away from your rookie season, looking back on it now?
My professionalism wasn't great back then. I I hurt my shoulder in like round two and didn't really take it seriously enough to rehab it properly. And everyone was telling me what to do, but I was 22 years old. I knew better.
Yeah.
And it deteriorated and I couldn't do any weights or anything like that, but it was just an AC joint, so you don't have to get surgery on them.
Yeah.
And I just plugged along, and then I lost my strength, and then that's why I got dropped, because I wasn't effective. So probably one lesson is try and be as diligent as you can with all that sort of stuff, and maybe, you know, I might have been had a little bit more of a successful year and certainly would have played more games, I think.
Yeah. When you look at some of the younger players, whether it's at the Roosters or at the Knights, being a senior leader and you've been part of the leadership group at both clubs for many years, Do you find that you're getting in the ears of the younger blokes and trying to, I guess, steer them in the right direction so that they take their injuries a little bit more serious now, you having that hindsight?
It's a little bit different now. I think while I wasn't back in the good old days, it was still a bit do your best 10 not years ago. Yeah, it was. Like, it's come a long way in 10 years, and especially the young guys, they've, I don't know whether they're educated into it or they just understand a lot more than what I did at that age, but it just seems like they're all over it. They come in ready to play first grade and they're physically there at 18, 19, where I was miles away. So whether it's the pathways that we're doing here or whether it's just outside mentorship or whatever it is, I just find it astounding that they come in and they're just so professional from that age.
So 2011, you play 14 games, 2012, 19 games. At what point, what season do you feel like, all right, I'm a bona fide first grader, I feel like I'm in the best 17 each week?
2012 was probably a year that I thought that. We were battling a bit at the Chooks, and week in, week out, I felt like not only was I doing my best for the team, but I was contributing.
Yeah.
Whether it was in defence or whether it was, you know, I scored a few more tries back then as well. but I just felt like I was a real contributor in that side, even though we were getting flogged. And then 2013 came along, and well, Smithy's time at the club finished in 2012. And Trent Robinson got named coach, and me and Piercy, actually, we went to Bali that off season and came back, and we were in horrible shape, and we went in and went for a sauna at the gym. We saw Robbo and had a chat to him, and he was very clear about what he wanted from us as senior players or leaders, and his vision in which way he wanted the club to go. And probably took me, it was a game against that year, 2013, we were actually here against the Knights, and I got dropped. I didn't get picked for that game, and I was filthy. Right. And I spoke to Robbo, and he sort of told me I still hadn't quite got that professionalism down packed. And he said, "Mate, if you get this right, you can not only play week to week, but you might be a rep footy player." He said, "I firmly believe that, but at the moment, you're just cruising through, and people that cruise through do this. They get dropped mid-season or things like that." So that was probably a wake-up call for me, because I felt by that stage I was good enough. And even when he dropped me, I was pretty filthy because I felt like I should have been playing. Yeah. But to have that chat with him, that I thought that I'd learnt from previous years, but he was made it clear that I was still
coasting by,
not really fully applying myself, and you know, still loved a good time, always will, but it's just to choose those times.
Yeah, right. So that was a light bulb moment for you then?
Yeah, it certainly was. It was flick the switch or get flicked myself at that stage. So
you pick you the next week?
I think you did. I don't think I missed too many games that year. Yeah. And then I think it might have even been through injury, to be honest. But that set us up for a run into the finals, and in turn set us up, set me up to play in a premiership winning side.
So what do you remember about grand final week? Everyone seems to have a different story.
Yeah, it was pretty full on. We got stuck in an elevator at the NRL breakfast.
What?
Yeah, and freaking out. There were some boys on there that were a bit nervous.
Who was in the elevator with you?
Mate, pretty much our whole squad. It was a huge industrial elevator, and it was, well, wherever we were. I think it might have been the entertainment centre or something.
Yeah.
And we've gone in this thing, and it's just stopped. And we're freaking out. So that was one of the memories of the grand final week. But I just felt that year we knew as a team that we'd done everything we can. So the week there was lots of media around, and you know it wasn't an ordinary week.
Yeah.
But all we were thinking about was that game.
Yeah.
And when the time came, probably didn't rise to the occasion right from the start, but there was a moment there when you could just see that in the second half we weren't going to get beaten.
Take me back to the elevator. Piercy's an interesting character. Was he one of them that was wigging out?
I can't remember what Piercy was doing.
I bet there was some conspiracy theories being thrown around the lift that Manly's been fiddling with it.
Some tells me that a couple of them were in there with us.
Right.
Yeah, it was a weird situation.
How long were you in there for?
Not long enough to get naked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fantastic. Did you score a try in that, GF?
Yeah, I did. My little mate, Mitchell, he was drifting across field, and I just put my finger up, and there was a massive gap, and he just threw me the ball, and felt like I'd run about 60 metres. but it was only about 15 metres out, and I just coasted over and put it down under the sticks. Unfortunately, that was when we were still a fair bit behind, so yeah, there wasn't much celebrating because we still had a job to do.
Yeah.
Whereas the two tries that followed that one, there was plenty of yahooing after that. Yeah. So
you're all business.
Yeah. I don't even think I smiled. But there was I'm certainly made up for that in the week following.
So full-time hooter goes off. Who's the first person that you're hugging?
I was on the bench, so whoever was next to me. But I hugged about 1,000 people that night. I was more, my throat was that sore from just doing the lap of honour with the trophy and celebrating with the team. No one was talking. We were just screaming at each other.
Yeah.
We sung that song and everyone was stoked. You look around the room and there was ball boys and their families and all the way up to the chairman, and everyone was just on the same level.
Yeah.
It was a great moment.
And I guess that moment sort of sets you up for the rest of your career and rep footy, like you mentioned, that Robbo had that chat to you earlier in the year about, you know, reaching your full potential. So you play for Italy at the end of that year, but in 2014 you make your Origin and Test debut. Talk me through Origin. As a Queenslander or a New South Welshman, any kid that loves their footy dreams about playing Origin and loves watching Origin. What are some of your Origin memories?
Yeah, the thing about Origin is, as you said, whether you're from New South Wales or Queensland, that's the one or the three games a year that you are invested in.
Yeah.
And growing up, that was the only real side that I followed. I didn't really have a club side or anything like that. So I was in the lead up. My name was getting tossed up in the papers, and we actually played a game up in Townsville, and I was on the back page, I think, and it was about how I was going to get named, and my mum showed me, and I blew up. I said, "Mum, you can't show me that. Like, I don't want to get my hopes up, you know." Like,
getting in your head.
Yeah. So she quickly apologised, and you know, it was as much for them as it was for me when my name got called out. It was huge. I remember where I was. I got a phone call from Trent Robinson. We just got back from Townsville, and I my wife now, she was a good friend of mine at the time, and I went to see her. She was at one of our friends' places, and sitting there talking, she was in town from Dubai. She was living in Dubai at the time, and I got the phone call and walked away, and then came back, and I had the biggest smile on my face, and my mate called it straight away. He said, that was Mel Meninga, wasn't it? And I said, it wasn't Mel, it was Robbo, but I'm going to see Mel tomorrow. And, you know, the joy that was in me. And then I look over at Belle, and she was crying, but she was crying more because she was back for 2 weeks and I was going to be gone for 10 days. So she ended up staying a bit longer than 2 weeks anyway. She's still here. But, yeah, that was the moment, and I just wanted to tell everyone, but it was, you got to keep it under wraps. So I called my old man and said, mate, I've got the call, I'm playing Origin, but you can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And he goes, can I tell your mum? I said, yeah, but tell her not to tell you. Like, she's a
chatterbox.
A bit of a gossiper up there in Townsville. So I was like, just keep it between our family. I've got two brothers. I said, keep it between us, and tomorrow it'll get read out. Anyway, so we get to camp, and I walk in, and it's like I felt like a 12-year-old boy because I was walking into this room of absolute, like, football legends. You know, you look at the names, that's almost, like, it's undeniable how good of an era that football is, for football, that side is. Exactly right. You know, and I walked in and I just felt like a boy again, looking at these blokes, and then come up and said g'day to me, and sort of had a little high-pitched voice. I was like, hello, how are you? But then we went out had a few beers that night, and it wasn't like, they weren't looking at me like they looked at me like I belonged. And it was crazy to think. I was wigging out a bit. I was like, I'm on the piss. I haven't earned the right to be able to do this with these fellas. But it was so good. And then the 10 days leading up to it, everything is focused on this one game, right?
Yeah.
So you're just so emotionally invested, and it's easy to see why the games are of such high quality, because you got 10 days to focus on one game. So every bloke in both sides is focused on their performance for this one game. So get to the game, national anthem. My family's come down. A lot of my friends have come. And I'm standing there looking into the crowd, and at ANZ Stadium. Actually, it was at Suncorp. At Suncorp, they were sitting right in front, like right at eye line, and the anthem's going. And I'm looking at mum and dad and Belle and my family, and I just start like tearing up a bit, like, because I knew for as much as it meant for me, it meant a lot for them as well. So played the game, toughest game of my life, and got the next time we lost that game, but Mel said we'll all be here next game. So got another shot and ended up playing 10 of those and cherished every moment.
Did you have a consistent roomie, or did it change up each Origin?
It changed up, but we had our rooms to ourselves when we were in the actual down at camp at Sanctuary Cove. Room to yourself, and then everyone just hangs in the common room anyway. Yeah. So it was one of those environments where there was no groups or anything. Everyone would go for a coffee, or everyone being watching two blokes play PlayStation. It's
just do it all together.
Good environment.
When you walk in and you've got the high pitched voice and you're feeling nervous, Darren Lockyer, I think that most kids, whether you're New South Wales or a Queenslander, can appreciate how good he was. Petro, I mean, who was the one that really got you going?
I'd spent time at Melbourne with Smithy and Cooper and GI, so I knew those guys from before, but it was just an intimidating scenario just to be in for me. Like, it was different because it was about Queensland. It wasn't just we were at the club together,
but
I one moment that stuck with me, and he's one of the all-time greats. I got my debut jersey presented to me, and after that, Jonathan Thurston came up and said, "Can I get a photo with you, with your jersey?" And that blew me away. Like, here's a bloke who's probably played about 30 at that stage.
Wow.
Wanted to get a photo with me getting my debut, and that's stuck with me.
Wow.
Yeah.
You and JT obviously played a lot of footy together. Then after that, the relationship that you had with JT.
Yeah, good. Yeah, we got along real well. It's as I said, it's that environment where everyone was just mates.
Yeah.
Yep.
So at the end of that Origin period, you then go on to make your Test debut for Australia. Where were you when that phone call happened? And talk me through that journey.
I was actually at my mum and dad's up in Townsville, sitting there, and I didn't get a phone call. It was on Fox Sports News, and the team was just running across the bottom. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think they were reading it out, and it went Farah and then Guerra, and I was beside myself. And then I was like,
"Is it by chance that you were watching Fox?"
No. Like, it was. It said that they were going to read out the team.
So you sat down and said, "Yeah." And
I didn't want to sit down and make a thing of it. I just wanted it on. Just, you know.
Yeah.
We went on the tour, and it was pretty unsuccessful tour for obviously Australia and certainly myself. I played in the first game. We got beaten, and I didn't play the greatest, and that was it. So I played one game for Australia, won more than a lot of people, but I wish I got another chance at that one. That's sort of one that
burn you a bit.
I'm really proud of my Queensland jerseys, and
because
I feel like I contributed in all those, but it's unfortunate to say. I just don't think that. I feel like there's unfinished business there, and I'm not going to get the chance to rectify it. I don't think. So yeah, I am proud that I played for Australia. I wish it went a little bit differently.
Yeah. Did you ever speak to anybody in the Kangaroos camp after the fact, or?
Oh no, that's one thing. I wish I had a chat. I wish I just went and had a chat to the coach, but didn't, so can't change it.
Yeah, that's life, isn't it? So, one and only Australian jersey, but you do go on to play more Origins and have a lot of success in the Origin arena. Tell us a bit about that special group, the Dynasty group, as they're now known, or you're now known.
Yeah, I got a ticket to on that bus, didn't I? I just walked into a side that had already, I think they'd won 8 or 9, and we lost them my first year. We lost that year, and after that, everyone just got together and just said, "Hey, it's not over. It's not over for us yet." And to be a part of, sat in there, and I got a speech one day. Cameron Smith gave the whole side a speech. It was midweek. And I felt like I could have gone out and played after. It was just the boys sitting down having a chat, and the way he was with his words, and obviously his actions back it up, but his demeanour in this talk, no one else said a thing. He just spoke to the boys, and you can see why he's going to be remembered as one of the greatest, if not the greatest. So to be able to play next to him, JT, and I've mentioned a few other names before, is great honour, and to be able to represent my family in Queensland was very special as well.
Do you think you're later in your career, when you started emerging as a leader and taking more responsibility as a leader, a lot of those learnings came from your time around the likes of Cameron Smith?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've tried to pick up something from anyone that I've felt like it's got something to offer.
Yeah.
As I've gone along, it's always hard, especially in those camps. You're only around a bloke for 8 or 9 days, or even, you know, when someone from All Blacks or something comes into the camp, comes into like the club and has a talk to us, I'll just try and pick someone's brain. Just even if I can pick one thing up, I find that there's a lot of different ways that people do things, but they're all in a roundabout way. They've all got the same purpose, and if I could just try and mix it all together and try and help out anyone else coming through. But I think leadership's it's hard to really say why someone is a great leader, and for most people, but when it comes to the guys in that team, it was very easy to see why they're great leaders.
At the end of 2014, you signed an extension with the Roosters, takes you to the end of 2017. Was there ever a period where rival clubs were throwing offers your way and you entertained those, or in your mind you always intended on staying at the Roosters?
Yeah, I didn't field any offers from any club. There was a little bit of chat that potentially could have gone elsewhere, but I didn't even worry about that at that stage. It was 2014, I was playing with my best mates. We were playing good footy, we were a successful side. 2015, we had another fairly successful year. And then 2016 came, and it was a tough season. Mm. Tough season for the club, tough season for me personally, more so professionally, than at home. But yeah, it was a tough year, and I guess that year there was a few whispers that they wanted to get rid of me, and I was linked to going to the Titans and things like this in the middle of the year. So I sat down with coach again, Robbo, and I said, mate, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he said, that's not coming from us. We want you here next year, because I believe you still got a lot to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to play for a contract. So 2016 was a bit of a write-off for me. It's just, I don't know, it probably took me till that off-season to really work out what was going wrong and where I'd got it completely. I don't know. It was just warped. My whole outlook on everything was warped from what got me to where I was to the person I was in 16. It was a tough year, and took me to November, in the middle of off season, for that to subside, and I realised why I play the game, because I love it, and get back to enjoying my football and let go of all the extra stresses that come with, being in a side that's losing or not playing a good game and all the external stuff. But that had never really got to me until this year, 2016, because it was tough.
When the noise is coming, and it's bulk of it's media driven, obviously, and everyone's got their own agenda, but as players, we often hear that, I don't read the press, I'm not buying into the press. But the reality is, sometimes you just can't block it out. So it sounds like that's the first time that noise actually penetrated through. How do you handle that?
I don't read into it too much, but once you see something, you can't unsee it, or once you hear something, you can't unhear it. So
it just plants a seed of doubt, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And not that I really needed any help, because my confidence was shot anyway, because we started 0-5 or 0-6 or something.
Yeah.
And there was weight on my shoulders and a few of the other leaders' shoulders, because we were down on troops from the previous year. And I just didn't shoulder that responsibility as well as I should. But one thing is, I took a lesson out of it, although it took me a long time to learn that lesson. I feel like I emerged from that year well equipped to handle anything, better equipped to handle anything that's thrown at me for the rest of my career. And then I even think that year will help me later on in life.
2017, play Origin. That's bringing a close to your time in the Queensland jersey. Was there ever a conversation that you had at rep level that, you know, the squad is going in a different direction, or was it just one of those things where you heard the team announced and you weren't part of that list?
No, I got a phone call the night before they made the team public.
Yep.
It hurt me a bit, but at the same time, I knew that I'd done everything I could.
Yeah.
Because we lost game one.
Yeah.
And after the game, even the coach came to me and said, "Mate, you played really well," because there wasn't too many people that night that could have said that.
Yeah.
He came to me and said that I played really well, and the coach said that. So he's not one that's going to lie, Kevy. Yeah. He's pretty good, but. Then when I got the phone call from him, I was a bit stunned. I was like, "But you said to me that I played well. Like, what's going on?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, mate. We see you as a different position. Like, because I was playing in the middle a lot.
Yeah.
And we're gonna go in a different direction." So for me, obviously, after that call, I took me a bit. Like, I was. Bit stunned by it all, as I said, but I didn't harbour any anger. I still don't, and if I ever got the opportunity to, I'd play for him again. But I looked at that like I've played 10 games for Queensland and held my head up high for, if not all of them, a large majority of them, and I feel like just that conversation with Kev, he knows that, you know, I haven't let him down, and I know that I haven't let him or Queensland down or my teammates down. And, you know, sometimes selectors go in a different way, and that was the year that they wanted to do it. So I'm glad that they still won the series that year, because I'm still a Queenslander and I still support that side. That maroon jersey means a lot to me.
Well, that's the thing at the end of the day. As long as you're contributing and giving it your all, that's all you can really ask of yourself.
Yeah, so after that, we had the bye, so I just said to the missus, I rang the missus on the way home and I said, "Let's go for mid-season holiday." So instead of going, instead of sticking around Sydney or reading all the papers or whatever, we shipped off that morning to Fiji, and I was actually really at peace with it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I felt like if I ever got the opportunity, I'd play again. But I was just stoked that I got the chance to play in 10.
So this season's your last year at the Roosters. At what point did the Knights jump on the radar in 2017?
Well, it was the same time. It was the same time, because I think I'd already signed with the Knights when all this went on. I think I was in the 10-day cooling off period.
Right.
So obviously after the conversation with Trent the previous year, I went to him after about 6 weeks and I said, "Mate, I'm playing good footy for you. You got a contract for me?" And he just said, "Oh, listen, I don't think we'd do it at this stage. Go out, see what you can get, and if we can, you know, if we can match it or whatever, then come back to me." So I rang my manager. Next phone call was to a manager, and spoke to a couple of clubs. I met with a couple of coaches. Then I drove to Newcastle, met with Brownie. And, the meeting went well. We sat there, we chewed the fat for a bit about all things life and football. And I was driving home. And I just had a little feeling that this might be the joint. And I didn't know anything about the town. That was the only time I'd been here apart from to play footy.
Yeah.
And, I got home and had a bit of a pep in my step. And Belle said to me, she goes, "So that went well, did it?" And I said, "Yeah, the way that they're going, the direction they're going, the role that I'll play, I feel like it's a good fit. we weren't concrete yet, but I was leaning towards the Knights, and yeah, obviously I signed it.
Yeah.
We moved down that off season, and yeah, we love it. We've blended into, I guess, the way of life here, and it really suits us because, I mean, we were in the middle of Bondi when we were in Sydney, but you don't go without here.
Yeah,
I think that's one thing that we were worried about, not being walking distance to a cafe or where are we going to go out for dinner. Or But it's got everything that you need. It's got the beaches, which is where we spent most of our time.
Yeah.
So yeah, we love the town.
You can keep it under wraps or throw it out. It's totally up to you. But some of the other clubs that were in the mix when Newcastle popped on the radar, can we throw it out there and give the guys an idea?
Oh, it was sort of that time where everyone had almost filled their roster as well, so there was only a couple of sides, and I mean the Titans and the Tigers. We were talking, but there was no offers. I didn't pursue offers from either clubs. Once I'd spoken to Brownie and went home and run it by the missus,
the boss.
She still wasn't sold on the idea, but I just felt like this was the right place. So I just told the manager, don't worry about pursuing the other clubs. Let's
do it here.
Yeah, let's just try and get it done. And about a week later, there was a line for me to sign on, and that was it.
So when you're meeting with Brownie and he's talking about the direction of the club for the future, Piercy hadn't signed, Connor hadn't signed, obviously Clem's a very new addition. I think you might have sort of kicked off that signing period for the club. Is that part of the conversation, that he needs a leader, he needs some experience, and if we're going to recruit some more high-profile players, we need somebody to help lead, you know, that usher in that next period of change for the club?
Yeah, I think so. And that was one of the major draw cards for me because, as I said before, the bigger the stage, the bigger the crowd or whatever, the more meaning the game had to me, the better I'd play. And it sounds funny because every game should mean the same, but it wasn't. A Monday night at the SFS, mate, you wouldn't put out people. You wouldn't put out as much as you would as a Sunday arvo, you know, and I knew that, and I felt like for me to come here, and although I was in the leadership group of the Roosters, if you had an off day, there was 9 other blokes that were gonna, you know, even more that'll win that game for us. And so I came here last year knowing that I had to play well every week, otherwise I was going to let the side down, and I felt like I relished that, and we did pick up a few good signings after that. Once I'd got here, with obviously Piercy coming, it was great to have him. As soon as we moved here, he was texting saying, oh, it looks nice, and then all that stuff went down, and I said, it is nice. Why don't you come?
Were you getting in his ear a bit? Because I think he's mentioned before that he'd spoken to you quite a few times. He'd spoken to Connor quite a bit as well.
Yeah, I know the kind of guy he is, so I didn't want to push it on him, but if he asked, I'd tell him, because we'd been here for a couple of months, and we were like, even Belle as well, she was like, no, it's good, like it's really good here. And she was talking to his girlfriend at the time, and we were just, if they wanted to know something, I was the first to tell him, like, it's bloody good here. So and I talked to him, so obviously a lot of his thought process is around football, and you know, I to be able to talk to him about the football side of things as well, I think that probably speaks to him a little bit more than, the beaches are nice, because beaches are nice where he was living as well. So I think when we did get him, I might have claimed that it was because of me, but it wasn't. It's I think he just saw the light as well and decided to come.
when you're chatting footy with him, and he does love to chat footy, what sort of conversation are you telling him about some of the players? And you've at this stage you've seen a young KP who hasn't realised his potential, but you can see the talent that he's going to become. Are you telling Mitch about this young kid? Are you telling him about some of the other juniors? What are those conversations looking like?
Yeah, I think I guess the style of play that Brownie was talking as well, that was one of them. Obviously KP was stepping people for fun at training, and sometimes that doesn't correlate with how they go in games, but luckily for us it is. But also just the willingness of the group. I think we haven't played against the boys the previous year or the previous couple of years. You knew what the Mitch Barnetts and Daniel Safidis and what they're about, even yeah. Jake, like, you know, Jacob, like, we played against them and they were tough bastards, and we knew that. Even from coming from the like at the Roosters, we knew that when we go to Newcastle, it's gonna be tough for a period of time.
Yeah.
But so they had it ingrained in them. They had that toughness ingrained, and that's probably one of the main ingredients to a successful side. You need to have that toughness, that resilience, and I saw it here with a group of players that, you know, obviously are still here and still playing, and even some that have left were impressive in the preseason. So they're a willing bunch, and they're tough, and there's a good direction that the footy team's going in, and I saw that, and I just relayed what I saw.
When you look back on 2018, there's a magical moment, round one, Mitch's field goal. You couldn't write the script any better. But do you look back on that season as one of missed opportunity?
To an extent, yeah. But you got to remember, we didn't have our halfback for 10 games. We didn't have Kalen pretty much since after Origin. Like, he was busted from up. And our depth wasn't there to help us win those games when we were missing them. And I mean, if you keep Piercy in, it's hindsight, and it's also a little bit, you know, what about this, what about that, mate, Mitch Pearce wins us at least five of those games when he's missing.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's probably going to serve us well, whether it's this year or whether it's next year, but that sort of grind is going to serve us well. And you can even see the change in demeanour a little bit, the way that we're playing this year. Like, we know that we can hang in there and we can take it to sides and we'll win some football games. Granted, we've lost a couple of tight ones, but we should be winning them. Like, we're a side now that should be winning those tight ones, and some of them will get away.
Yeah.
But I think that the history of some players that and this club are going to set us in good stead, whether it's, as I said, this year or next year. I can feel it. There's something brewing.
So the message to the fans is stick tight. We're not far off.
Oh, I don't think I need to tell the fans that. They're a pretty loyal bunch.
They are.
It's not hard to see, and there's another reason. Like, you come here and play a wooden spoon Newcastle Knights in 2016 or 2017 and there's 20,000 people. You don't get that anywhere else.
Yeah.
You don't get that anywhere else. Nowhere in Australia.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. As we wrap up, favourite roommate over the years, all the different teams that you've been part of?
Oh, there's two that are probably dominant in my career, and that's Boyd Cordner. I room with him most of our career. Very similar guys. We just like to relax and put a movie on and have a sleep and have a laugh. And then Piercy as well. I don't know if I'd just call him my favourite, but he's one of the most memorable.
Doss, thanks so much. Appreciate you taking time out of your day to chat to us. And best of luck with the recovery on the ankle.
No worries. Thanks, mate.